Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the show where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick, and I'm here, as always, with my co-hosts, Allison with an I.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Allison with a Y.
Hi.
And we are gathered here today to get through this thing we call horror catch-up. Every month we get together and talk about all the horror that we have been watching and reading and listening to outside of our mission to watch every horror movie on Netflix. And we are going to start today with a brand new release, Allison with an I, and I went to see The Long Walk.
Boy, did we.
I think it's fair to say that we're still both a little traumatized.
Yeah, wow. I still need more time to process that. But yeah, we went and did the damn thing.
I think I said this to you in the parking lot outside the theater last night. I was like, I think that might be literally number one, the best movie I've ever seen that I never want to see again.
Yeah, I have no desire to ever see that movie again. I'm glad that I did. I think the adaptation was brilliant, but that's going on the list for me with movies like Requiem for a Dream or mm-hmm. Trainspotting or Full Metal Jacket of just that did not work with my brain at all.
Yeah. And it's weird because, like, the book was so fresh in my mind. I had just read it. And I suppose we should summarize real briefly for those who might not be familiar. But the premise of The Long Walk is in kind of a dystopian American reality. Young men from all over the country throw their names into the proverbial hat to be part of this long walk where everybody walks, has to keep a certain pace. And if they fall below that pace, they get shot. And the last man standing gets essentially whatever the hell he wants. So, you know, I mean, Stephen King originally wrote this story, presumably as like a Vietnam allegory. Mm-hmm. But boy, does it work like weirdly better than ever in our current like quasi-dystopian present.
Yeah, it's too topical, I think. And especially given like just, you know, the violence of the last few weeks here in America, mm-hmm. you know, it's always been violent here. It feels like it's getting worse. Patrick and I looked at each other and we were like, what made us think that seeing this movie right now is a good idea?
right. What a weird fucking week for it to come out, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. Like just even 9/11 alone is like so
bleak and
grim and like just a somber history. But then the other events of that week were just a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that gave it added weight and made it harder to watch. But also, it is just a fucking brutal movie under any circumstances. Like, honestly, in the first 15 minutes, there is an image that is honestly one of the most graphic things I have ever seen in a movie.
Yeah.
And it's entirely appropriate to the story. It's entirely appropriate to the moment. But I was just shocked. And that particular image is still just burned into my brain and will probably stay there for a while.
Yeah.
And that's just the beginning.
Yeah. I was trying to think if there were any moments of like beautiful landscape or like I couldn't think of anything that brought this movie any sort of like levity or anything to focus on other than the just grief and shock and trauma and sadness of it all. Like, yeah, there's some fun conversations that happen between the boys, but then you mm-hmm. know, like, that they're not all going to survive. It was just mm-hmm. it was like the most condensed version of Game of Thrones ever, where you're like, you get attached to someone and then you're like, well, goodbye, you know?
Yeah.
In the worst way. Yeah, I read the book. I think I encouraged you to read the book because you hadn't yet. And I was so pumped for this movie to come out. And I just think that the timing of it all is just what's making this a lot harder for me. Mm-hmm. I did hear a rumor, and I haven't corroborated it yet with fact checking, but I heard a rumor that Stephen King said, the only way I'm going to let you adapt this, my story, into a movie is if you don't cut away from the scenes of violence. And mm-hmm. they didn't. I mean, there were a few shots that were taken from the background, but so many of them were just really, really graphic. And I think, you know, the point in him doing that was like, you can't look away from this stuff. And, you know, I quite literally did look away. Like, you saw me covering my eyes a couple of times, which is so uncharacteristic for me, but it was all too much.
Yeah, I mean, same. I am not someone who has a hard time sitting through movies or wants to look away from the screen often. And I wouldn't say I quite looked away, but there were definitely a few moments where, you know, a death was coming and I was looking at the pavement under their feet or something because I just couldn't quite bring myself to fully look at another death. Yeah. And lest it sound like I'm criticizing the movie for that, like, I think it's incredibly well done, incredibly impactful. Francis Lawrence, who did, I think, most or all the Hunger Games movies, directs this and does an incredible job with the actors and making it feel exciting, even though, maybe exciting is not the right word, gripping, compelling, even though it's just guys walking and talking and getting shot for, you know, almost 2 hours. It is extremely well done. The performances are incredible. Cooper Hoffman, Philip Seymour Hoffman's son, anchors this and is surrounded by really, really talented young actors who do an amazing job.
Yeah, David Johnson, who plays McVries, who is alongside Cooper Hoffman, who played Garrity, is I've not seen him in anything. I saw a lot of chatter about him after we saw the movie, and I allowed myself to like go into the Reddit spaces and read what other people thought so as not to have spoiled it for myself beforehand. But there was a lot of like, who is this guy? He's amazing. These two are just up and coming, fresh faces. Can't wait to see what else they do.
Oh my God, I actually didn't realize that was David Johnson. He was in Alien Romulus last year, and he was amazing. Like, I didn't like the movie very much, but he was incredible in it. And yeah, he's amazing in this too. Like, actually, I was kind of remiss in saying Cooper Hoffman anchors the movie because it's definitely Cooper Hoffman and David Johnson, and they are incredible together. And Johnson is, he's doing a lot. He's doing a lot in this.
Yeah.
And between those two movies, I am very excited to see more from him.
I hope they're friends in real life. I really need them to be.
Too.
Like, I even had to watch a couple behind the scenes of just them shooting the movie and laughing because I was like, okay, it's just a movie.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Now we need like a nice, you know, buddy comedy or something for the two of them so we can see like these two actors in playing characters that aren't just dealing with incredible fucking trauma the entire movie.
Yeah. Agreed. Slapstick comedy next, please.
Yes, exactly.
I was thinking the same thing when you said, like, I don't want to shit on the movie because it was a brilliant adaptation. You know, they really did this, I think, the way it needed to be done. For me personally, it was just bad timing. And another thing, like, Patrick and I looked at each other a couple of times and we're like, we're so glad Allison with a Y isn't here because I like a little bit tried to convince them to come. And instantly was like, oh God, no.
Yeah.
Nope. They wouldn't have done well with this. I didn't do well with this. And I think my, my threshold's pretty high. I said to Patrick at the end, in the parking lot again, like, I can't even think of anybody who's in a okay enough headspace that I would recommend this to, you know?
Seriously. Yeah. I mean, that's what I was just about to say. Like, is it a view it, cue it, or screw it? I mean, like, I guess it's view it, but also I don't know anybody who I would just like willingly say go subject yourself to this
same
trauma when we're already like dealing with a lot in general as a society right now.
Yeah, I guess somebody who's completely tapped out, not paying attention to what's going on in politics, hasn't watched any current events, isn't on social media, just loves Stephen King, this might be for you. But I think as an empath for myself, and I can't, it was too much. So brilliant film. Never want to see it again.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, that's The Long Walk. And we'll move on to another recent release. Allison with an I. I know that you just caught up to one of the hits of the summer, Weapons.
Oh, my God. I think it's my second favorite horror of the year. But what a year it's been. Really, like, golden age of horror. I think we've said that a couple times. But the hits just keep coming for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my first favorite spot is going to be for Sinners because it's really going to be hard to top that one for me. But this movie is now in second place for my favorite horror of 2025. Easy.
Yeah,
And I love that. I think I saw the first trailer for Weapons. I don't know. I think we talked about it on a podcast episode, like, God, 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I've been excited about this movie since I saw the trailer. And then I made sure not to watch anything else about it since then. Because my thing right now is to go into movies, we've talked about this as well, completely as blind as possible.
Yeah, buddy.
And so I didn't want to know anything more than what was in the trailer that I saw 6 months ago that I could barely remember.
Yeah, the trailer leaves out a lot. It doesn't really give you any indication of what a weirdly funny movie it's going to be and how many different characters it's going to bop around. Like, it seems like it's mostly just about Josh Brolin and Julia Garner, who are both awesome in the movie, but it doesn't really prepare you for this sort of, like, Magnolia-esque, like, horror trip through several different characters' perspectives, which I really liked.
I was surprised when that was kind of the format of this film, and I was also surprised by, and I don't think we should probably spoil it just because it's so new that some of our listeners have probably still not seen it, even though I would emphatically recommend you do, but I didn't see the twist of the backstory of the villain whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Didn't see that coming at all. Allison with a Y, did you see Weapons?
No, I didn't.
Okay. I do. What do you think, Patrick? You think they'll like this?
I think Allison with a Y might struggle a little bit with some of the gore. Mm-hmm. But also, Barbarian had some, you know, Zach Cregger just loves a good head explode. And there's more head explode in Weapons.
I'm not good with that.
Yeah.
And I know, like, I like horror. I like spooky stuff. I don't love violence. I don't love graphic violence. And it, like, Barbarian was tonally kind of funny.
Yeah.
So that's when I can, like, it's much more easy for me to handle the violence when it's, like, there's some levity there.
Oh, Weapons is same tone. Like,
yeah, also, I would say, yeah.
Also definitely funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see you liking it. Why? I'm just going to say, and if and when you get around to watching it, I'd be so curious if I'm right about that or if I have you pegged wrong still, so.
Allison with an I, can we also just take a moment to recognize the majesty of our queen, Julia Garner?
Oh, my God.
Like, holy shit.
I watched Ozark start to finish. Loved it. Was super, super devoted and loyal fan. But she, you know, so I know her as that character because she was just so steeped in that personality. She made that show, you know, she took that show from a, you know, whatever, 7 to a 9.5 for me. But this was a very different character for her.
I haven't watched any Ozark, and I'm actually a newcomer to the Julia Garner like fandom. But between this and Fantastic Four, which also just came out, I'm like, okay, this woman fucking rules.
Yeah,
and especially in Weapons, like, I just loved that character. Was so like distinct and specific and wonderful. I think I posted on the Discord, like, I want a million movies about that character specifically, which isn't going to happen, but I just loved her. She was great.
You could make a movie about every character in this movie. Even just a short on every single one of them, which, whatever, I won't get into that, but, and I would watch. Like, they were all so fascinating, and every chapter was really well written, and I have my favorites, and we can talk about that offline so as not to spoil, but, man, I loved this. I loved this movie.
Hell yeah. Allison with a Y, you and I recently watched also a fairly new release. I think it came out last year. Yeah. From one of my favorite directors, Steven Soderbergh. We watched Presence.
Yeah. Yeah, I went into it not knowing anything other than the basic premise. Patrick, you told me that it was a Steven Soderbergh movie, and it was basically from the perspective of the entity in a house.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. Yeah, okay.
A haunting movie told by the haunter.
Yeah.
The spirit.
I loved that concept, and turns out I loved the actual execution of it.
I did too. Soderbergh is such an inventive director, and he loves a weird, like, formal exercise in filmmaking where he sets himself a weird challenge. And of course, in this case, it's telling a story from the perspective of a character who you never see, who does not have dialogue because they're a spirit, and yet you still build incredible empathy with this character and a sense of who they are or were and what their motive is and what they want.
What really struck me about the film was how so much emotion was conveyed from the entity itself just by camera movements and what this presence was zooming in on and lingering on and just
looking away from.
Looking away from at times. There's plenty of, I think, well, there's definitely one very plausible theory based on things that happen in the film of who the entity could be. But even then, I think there's plenty of plausible deniability as well for that. Like, there's nothing solid. You don't know anything about who they are and what their motivations are. But they end up with, without, I don't think this spoils anything to say, that the spirit is very empathetic. And it's not an ominous presence. It is a presence that feels like it is particularly looking after one member of the household and seems to be emotionally invested in their safety.
Right. It feels like a curious presence more so than an ominous presence right from the beginning, which is, I mean, honestly, just a feat of directing and staging and camera work in and of itself. Like, it's simple because it's just a lot of like steady cam work and kind of this consistent like fisheye lens, so you get a lot of what's going on in every room of the house and every scene. But it's deceptively simple. It's exhibit A for you don't have to have a bunch of effects, a bunch of makeup, a bunch of gore, a bunch of conspicuous trickery to create an amazing horror movie.
Yeah, and there was really good tension built up at times. Yeah, I really...
There's an extended scene at the end that is horrifying to watch in ways that you absolutely will not expect.
Yeah.
It rules. Presence rules. It's on Hulu right now. Go check it out.
Definitely recommend.
That includes you. I think you would love Presence. Go check it out. It's like, and also, and I, it's one of the, it's the length I love. It's like an hour and 20 minutes or something like that. It gets in and gets out.
Yeah, I was just going to say that while the two of you were chatting about it, I was Googling it because it sounded really familiar. I remember it being on a list of movies I wanted to see somewhere and saw that it's an hour and 25 minutes. Like, why wouldn't I watch it? Yeah. I have almost nothing to lose there.
Yep, exactly.
Great. Sold.
Hell yeah. Well, I know that you watched a whole bunch of horror on your way to and from Italy, so you got to catch us up on a couple of recent releases that you checked out.
Yeah, that was how I spent most of my plane time to and from Italy, and I was joking, but like I was like, I hope the same people don't happen to be sitting behind me on the plane to and from Italy, just watching me like just binge graphic bloody horror,
like me watching Clown on the plane.
Yeah, that's right. Oh my gosh!
At least that was on my iPad, so I could like set it in my lap as he was like blowing his candy colored brains out.
My God. I will say that I spent like the last third of the trip home. This is such a weird thing, but like, let me know if you've ever done this. Watching the person in front of me's screen, watching Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Oh, that's one of my favorite plane pastimes, is just watching what everybody else is watching.
Oh, yeah.
I caught myself being like, I could turn this on at any point in front of me, but I want to watch them watching it.
Exactly. So with no sound.
No sound whatsoever. They had their closed captioning on. So I was just, and I was very content. I was like, you know, at this point, my brain is probably just rotted from like all the travel and a long travel day because I'm thoroughly enjoying this and I can't explain why.
One time, well, when we were coming back from Italy, I was watching a movie and the person who is like right in front of me was watching the same movie, but they were like 20 seconds ahead of me. So I kept getting really anxious about accidentally glancing over and like seeing the thing happen before it happened on mine. And I just kept being like, don't look, don't look, don't look.
So funny. God, the brain does really funny, weird things when you're just trapped in a metal tube in the sky.
So it does. Weird.
But I did. I watched. So first off, I watched The Monkey, which had been on my list forever. And I was like, you know, scrolling through the options on the plane. And it was the first thing I saw. And it was no hesitation. I was like, yep, that's what we're watching.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was, and I know, Patrick, you talked about this on a catch up, like, I don't know, 2-3 months ago. But I thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like I was laughing out loud, which I think I hoped would happen, but again, didn't know a lot about this movie going into it. I knew the very general premise of it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you and I are big Stephen King lovers, so mm-hmm. I'll hail, you know, that.
Yeah, had you read the story?
I have not, no. Nope.
Okay. Yeah, me neither.
Had you before? Okay.
No.
I loved all the Stephen King Easter eggs. So the babysitter's name, Annie Wilkes.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, there was like a Mrs. Torrance reference in there at one point. So that was like, you know, like truly like a little Easter egg hunt, which is always a good time. It was somehow funny, and I think the writing was really tight, and the gore factor, talk about head explosion. There was just all kinds of exploding bodies in this movie.
Uh-huh. I cackled. I cackled a lot in the theater at this. I loved it.
Yeah, it did exactly what I wanted it to do for me. So past, I think it was, you know, just over an hour and a half.
Another perfect length.
Perfect way to spend that time on a plane where you have nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm.
On the way home, I saw a movie that I'd been meaning to watch for a really long time, Companion. Have either of you seen that?
Hell yeah, I saw that in the theater.
Okay, right. You talked about this on a catch-up once, again, a while ago. I'm really behind. I fucking loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I really do love like a good for her movie, and this was so that.
Mm-hmm.
I got big abusive relationship PTSD vibes watching this movie, and I think it was written in a way that touched on that without overly politicizing that or beating you over the head with it, because the premise of the movie is really not that. I mean, it is, but right, she's a bot. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that you're really, it's hard not to relate to her, but you know, technically we're not even of the same, you know, we're human, she's not.
Right. She's an android girlfriend, for those who aren't familiar with the premise.
But man, just, there were a couple times where I was like, ooh, like, God, I dated a guy like that.
Yeah.
You know, like that Josh character where you're just like, you are such a piece of shit and you have zero self-awareness. And if you could turn me off, like power me down and just power me up when you wanted to use me, I think you would. And there were a couple times that I was like, are we going to be having these like incel tech partner conversations in the future? Like we might be, you know.
Sure, I seems mean, like it.
Yeah, it does sure seem like it. And based
I mean
on,
you can already have an AI girlfriend, like
totally.
I'm sure the body, the physical body, is the next step in that development.
Mm-hmm. There's some steps away still from that, but it's not going in that direction, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It really did illustrate the ways that these relationships can be, I guess, used depending on who the host is, you know, depending on who the person in charge is. How much empathy do they have? How much compassion? How much capacity to love? I don't know. I walked away being like, that was a thinker for sure, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, let's move beyond movies to books. Allison with a Y. I know you've got a book with an awesome title to share with us.
Yeah, so I'm not quite all the way through it yet, but I'm probably like 3/4 of the way through it, nearing the end of it. It's called In the Garden of Spite by Camilla Bruce.
That is a delicious title.
It is. It is a delicious title. I didn't know that this was a genre, but basically it's a true crime horror historical fiction. Novel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, where do I start? So it's about this actual female serial killer in American history. Her name was Belle Gunness. And so it follows her. Half of it's from her perspective, half of it's from her sister's perspective. Mm. And so you get in Belle's head, and then you get in the head of somebody who is very close with her and does not share her inclinations and begins to grow suspicious of her. And so Belle Gunness, she was called the Widow of Laporte. She, two of her husbands succumbed to untimely, mysterious deaths.
Mm.
And then it is believed that she, post those marriages, she murdered many other men in her inn or farm that she ran. I don't know if like the history pre the murders, how accurate it is, but it's definitely like inspired by, because she's from Norway originally, and it alludes to something. Well, it talks about something very, very, very traumatic that happened to her in her teenage life that potentially happened. I have to look into her history more to see if that's speculation based on things that happened around her, if that actually happened to her. And then that kind of explains why she becomes this really hateful, vengeful person. But it's also fascinating because she adopts like children and is like supposed to be like, is actually like a really loving mother to them and is like very protective of these children, but like hates these men. And it is really interesting. I didn't know that this was a genre of books, but apparently this author has other ones about other female serial killers, and I want to read them all. Because I'd heard the story of Belle Gunness before, years ago, on an episode of My Favorite Murder, you know, so I knew exactly who she was. And so it's just like a very, it's not fun, but it's a interesting way to kind of tell the story.
That does sound interesting to me. I'm not like a huge history head, as we all know, but that sounds like an ideal way for me to consume history.
Yeah, I think if you were going to, that would probably be the best way to get you to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that sounds interesting to me too. I'm going to look into that one.
Well, to close us out today, I'm going to self-promote.
Do it.
Pop off, King.
I just read a great horror comic and I wrote it.
I thought you were going to set us up for like, who wrote it, Patrick?
No, I wouldn't obligate you all to do that. No, I just dropped a new mini comic called White Noise. Listeners may know I put out a comic called Our House last year, which was very social, political, kind of low-key, surrealist horror. And White Noise is just a weird-ass little story about what happens when you're laying in bed, trying to sleep, listening to your white noise machine, and you start hearing some things through the white noise machine that you don't really want to hear. It's based on a sort of true story in the sense that I was extremely paranoid one night. I listened to white noise every night, and I started feeling like I heard voices through my white noise machine. And I was simultaneously terrified and also like, you know what? This would make a great comic. I have to remember this in the morning.
Yeah.
So it was a little side project for me in the midst of a bigger project that I'm working on right now. And I had a lot of fun with it. It's a quick little read. It's $3. If you want one, you can just shoot us a message on any of our social media platforms and send me your address and I'll get you a copy. And that is a great segue also to remind you of where you can find us on social media.
You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, YouTube at Amoncast, EHMONCAST. And on TikTok, who knows for how long, because who knows what's going on with that. But if we're still around there, at Amon Podcast.
And also, go to our website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. We've got every episode of the show, all 200 and fucking some of them. And also a link to our merch store, where you can get all kinds of goodies with Every Horror Movie on Netflix art that I designed on them.
Also, check us out on Discord. We have a fun following there. We have bigger, better conversations sometimes than we're able to have here for the sake of time. And please leave us a review anywhere that you get your podcasts, and preferably a nice one or else.
And you can find links to all the socials and the Discord server in the show notes. Well, I think that closes out another episode of Horror Ketchup. The only thing we have left to do before we wrap up is find out what movie we're watching next. And it is the Wheel of Death's turn to pick a movie for us, which means we're going to get out this great big digital wheel. It's a really impressive piece of futuristic technology. It's got every horror movie on Netflix loaded into it, and it's going to randomly pick one for us to watch next episode. So let's find out what it picks.
Oh boy. What are we gonna get?
We are watching Secrets in the Hot Spring.
Huh.
And the Netflix synopsis is, when three teen outcasts arrive at a hot springs hotel to help run things, creepy incidents prompt comical efforts to find what lurks in their midst.
Interesting.
Very interesting indeed. We'll find out what that's all about next episode. Until then, for every horror movie on Netflix, I'm Patrick.
I'm Allison with a Y.
And Allison with an I.
And we'll see you next time.